welcome back to another exciting episode of the Ministry of Hemp podcast. And I want to thank everybody that has been listening and giving feedback. It has been great. You can always tweet at us on Twitter, at ministryofhemp.com. You can hit us up on Facebook, /ministryofhemp, or you can call us, too, 402-819-6147. And you can leave us comments, questions, anything you want. I would love to play them on the show. Please, give me a call. And of course, you can always find that number in the show notes as well. But enough of all that. On March 29th, I was in Colorado for the two-day Northern Colorado Hemp Expo, the largest hemp expo in the United States. The NoCo Hemp Expo started about 6 years ago. This was NoCo 6, and just like anything else, it started pretty small. NoCo was put on by the Colorado Hemp Company, which is a division of WAFBA, which stands for We Are Better for Alternatives, which I'm assuming means alternatives to wood, alternatives to plastic. The basic idea was to get people that are excited about hemp and what you can do with it under one roof, to show it off, not just for industry people, but for people that want to know where this is going. It started very small, and now it has grown to huge size. 10,000 people plus attended NoCo 6 this year. I was one of them. And today, we're going to explore my NoCo audio guide. Let me tell you, I was not prepared for what I walked into. This year's NoCo Hemp Expo took place at the Crowne Plaza Hotel, just next door to Denver International Airport. As we walked in, we had to check in to get our meteor badges and whatnot, and there was this really long hall we walked down with a ton of people. Everyone seemed really nervous. I struck up this conversation with a very nice woman while I was walking down the hall. Get in.
There's a ton of people here. Are we going the right way?
The expo hall is this way. I know, okay. It's really creepy.
Like, what's that huge line for, you know?
To get registered for the conference passes.
Oh, okay.
And so when I went to buy my conference pass, they were sold out, and I booked my arrangements in February.
Okay. Who are you with?
I'm Black River Hemp Company.
Black River Hemp Company. I'm Matt Baum, Ministry of Hemp. I'm recording for a podcast, so I'm just getting some like background audio right now. So what do you guys do?
Seeds to sale. So last year was our first year we could grow in Wisconsin, and my background is in natural therapies and holistic health, so I've been waiting for an opportunity like this to bring this plant medicine forward.
Cool. Beth was great. She showed me how to actually get to the expo, and she wasn't even set up there. She was just showing up to see what was going on. Now, as you heard her say, she works for a CBD company that is seed to sale. That basically means she works for a CBD company that controls not only making the CBD, but actually growing the hemp from seed to plant, then extraction, and finally into little glass bottles that you see CBD tinctures come in. I was there with Jessica St. Cyr, who is Ministry of Hemp's videographer, who was obviously doing video stuff, with help from her husband, Spencer. Great guy, helped me a lot too. And when we walked in, needless to say, we were a little overwhelmed.
As you enter into the hall, it is complete chaos. There are so many people here. It is out of control. Apparently, last year, people said it was in a smaller space, and there were too many people. We're in a much larger space this year, and there's still way too many people. This is crazy. There is hemp everything. Hemp clothes, hemp makeup, hemp hairspray. There's hemp food and drink, industrial hemp, like farmers and industrial equipment and tumblers and curing machines. Of course, there's aisles and aisles and aisles of CBD. And there is 100,000 people.
Okay, to be fair, there's a little over 10,000, but I was overwhelmed.
All walks of life, too. I was kind of shocked. I thought this would be more, I guess, marijuana themed. I thought there'd be a lot of people wearing pot leaves and whatnot. The glowing marijuana like leaf necklaces, but it's not at all. This is all walks of life. There's suits here,
This was seriously not what I expected at all. And the first day was just industry people. So Basically, you had to be working in the industry or in the media like me to get in, but it was all walks of life, everyone you can possibly imagine, and not just a bunch of hippies. There were business people. There was a huge European contingent. There were investors. There were lawyers. There were pharmacists. Everyone you can think of was here to check out what was going on with the hemp movement.
Hey, what's happening?
Just going around giving out t-shirts and stickers.
Nice. Look at this.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that guy?
This shirt.
That's me bumping into Ministry of Hemp's editor-in-chief, Kit O'Connell, who is actually moderating a hemp and media panel. We'll get to that in a little bit. But first, let's talk about the show floor. It started on one end with industrial hemp. Outside, there was a bunch of farm equipment. From there, it moved into extraction equipment. Next up, you bumped into textile people, and then aisles and aisles, like I said, of CBD. After that, there were lawyers, there were real estate agents, there were backyard hemp farmers. Of course, there was people selling all manner of hemp food and drink as well. Kit was with Drew De Los Santos, who also works for Ministry of Hemp. She's in sales and sponsorship, and she had just been at a farming talk that sounded absolutely amazing, and they were gushing about all the stuff that they had seen on the expo floor as well.
Is equitable, transparent, has integrity, is giving back to the land. Just like making sure that there's cover crops. Somebody covered no-till organic farming.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, that is awesome.
We were just over at the Rebotanicals booth, and they have this new like roll-on oil that smells and feels amazing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I put it all over my neck, and you were rubbing. Drew was putting it on her temples, and it feels so good.
I was giving
myself
a face
massage. Faces. Yeah.
It's like ginger lime scented. It's really nice.
I know I'm starting to sound like a broken record, but you would not believe how many different vendors were at this convention doing everything that you could possibly think of with this plant. The first day that I was there, I was bewildered. I literally wandered around like a lost child, wide-eyed, just marveling at all the different aspects of hemp that were represented.
There's hemp. A bunch of hemp pet treats, CBD for your pets, drinks, all manner of bath soaps, bath and body balms, literally anything you can think of, hemp is here.
Maybe it's just because I'm new to this. And of course, I'm aware that hemp is a huge market that's burgeoning. There's a reason I'm doing a podcast about it. But I could not believe how many people were here and how excited they all were for every aspect of hemp and what it can do for society. And not just that, but the responsibility behind that. It really was incredible.
More than 200 different companies signed up to come and display here. Thank God there's a cash bar, because this is a little overwhelming.
Oh, pardon me.
Sorry, guys. Excuse me. It is very crowded. I have no idea. They told us to expect 10,000 people, and I would bet every bit of 10,000 people showed up.
After finally gathering my wits and getting my bearings for the show floor itself, it was time to start talking to people. And oddly enough, one of the first guys I talked to was from Nebraska, just like me. Nebraska, just like me.
Jeff.
Okay.
Pascal.
Pascal, and you're with Sandhills Hemp.
Correct.
What does Sandhills Hemp do?
It's coming soon.
Coming soon.
But essentially want to convert family farm to hemp production.
Okay.
It's been corn forever.
Right.
Been in the family for 100 plus years.
Right. You're out in the panhandle of Nebraska, basically.
Atkinson, do you know where that
Atkinson,
is?
Atkinson, yeah, of course. I'm Omaha, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Atkinson and down near McCook also.
Cool.
So there's lots of land.
Right.
There's expertise. So the question really becomes, legislation in Nebraska is difficult.
Yeah. What's the challenges you're running into right now?
They're pretty much stonewalling applications, and or the barriers to entry are really high. Last year was ridiculous. Barriers to entry were about $100,000 for five plants.
God.
You know, to the ag school, right?
Right.
So they've got to really get off of that.
Yeah.
and then, you know, make the move, in my opinion, to sustainable agriculture, end of monocropping in Nebraska, and then regenerate that soil.
Yeah, because it's a desert out there right now.
Exactly, a wet one.
Corn, which is bizarre. Corn and soybeans have, like, robbed all the nutrients from a lot of the farm fields out there.
Right.
And it's now, are you a farmer or are you an advocate?
Or both?
Both. Both, okay.
Essentially, I mean, right now I'm not farming.
Okay.
But,
How much land do you have that you want to plant hemp? Roughly.
Probably to start like 120, 130 acres.
Okay.
And then up to 1,100 acres, you know, potentially. But
is there any hope with legislation? What do you think?
I think eventually.
Right.
I mean, the legislation's there in the Farm Bill. But really, Nebraska has to come up with their own program that is inclusive.
And the farmers out there are seeing the money that's coming out of Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and they've got to say, this is so much better than fighting with the Chinese and Trump over my soybeans. You know?
And corn.
Yeah, and corn.
Right. And, by the way, all the pesticides and fertilizers being sprayed.
Right.
Their soil. It is a desert to that point because of monocropping.
Yeah.
So,
Jeff, I appreciate talking.
Jeff was one of 100 different farmers, and not just farmers, but CBD companies that were there that grow their own hemp. Jeff's a gung-ho guy fighting the good fight, and yeah, he's doing it right here in Nebraska, where we really need hemp, and it's really just a matter of convincing the not just the government, but the farmers that they should be growing it too. But there were much more than just farmers at NoCo 6.
Okay, so what do we have here?
This right here is a full spectrum hard candy.
Okay,
this
it's a hard candy.
Yeah, that's a lemon full spectrum. All we did was we took our suckers that we brought to the show and smashed them into pieces.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's potent stuff. I don't know.
How are you getting the CBD into the candy itself?
We have an emulsification process that prevents vaporization. That's the thing that's really hard to do.
Right.
I'm not going to give away all the secrets.
I got you.
But I will tell you this. When we say 50, we mean 50.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Fair enough. Like you can taste it.
Oh, yeah. If
it
I gave you this sweet. Right here, you would be having
I'd
a
chill
fantastic.
The f*** out. Huh?
Chilling the f*** out.
Yeah? Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Let me tell you, if you want evidence you cannot overdose on CBD, go to the NoCo convention. Everyone is giving out samples of everything CBD, and I tried all of them. I had a pretty good day, I gotta say. Felt pretty loose, felt pretty good all day long. And let me tell you right now, these people have figured out how to get hemp into anything. For example, Nick French from Colorado Hemp Honey.
Tell me about hemp honey. How does this work?
So I've been beekeeping for 12 years, producing raw honey that entire time.
Okay.
The last 4 years, I've been producing Colorado Hemp Honey, which is raw honey infused with a full spectrum hemp extract.
Okay.
And so we take the whole plant extract, which, you know, contains CBD. So CBD is naturally occurring in hemp, but we use a full spectrum hemp extract, meaning that we're putting more in it than just CBD. You're getting terpenes, you're getting phytonutrients, you're getting flavonoids, you're getting the whole contents of the hemp.
Now, I'll be real honest, I didn't know what some of that meant, but I will learn about it in the next episode.
And where does your extract come from? Who are you getting that from?
We're growing it.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, years ago, I mean, when we started 4 years ago, everybody told us, you got to buy from Europe. It's the only way it can be legal.
Yep.
And then, so we did. And then we realized that Colorado was producing a lot of really good quality hemp. And so we thought, okay, we'll start to, we were buying from a guy out of Pueblo. And then last year we said, we're going to start growing. We've been sitting on 27 acres for, you know, all this time. So we grew half an acre, and we only grow for our own products. And so we're not growing and making oil and selling to other people.
Okay, you know, it's strictly for the honey.
Strictly for the honey.
Wow.
That way we can control what goes into the plants.
Sure.
And also because we're beekeepers, we're conscious about what we do with our hemp plants.
Okay.
You know, I love walking down my rows of hemp, seeing crickets and grasshoppers and ladybugs. And there's even a big snake that lives on the farm that comes out there. I mean, that's part of the environment. And then our bees, right? The bees are out there as well.
Do the bees actually pollinate the hemp? I mean, I don't know if that's a dumb question or not.
It's not a dumb question at all. Yeah, bees have evolved over millions of years to go from the male part of the plant to the female part of the plant.
Right.
Transport pollen, which results in fruits and nuts and vegetables. The bees do it. I had 20 hives on 70 acres of industrial hemp in 2015 north of Denver out in Loch Buoy. And the bees love the pollen, but there's no nectar in cannabis and hemp.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
So you can't produce nectar or honey directly from hemp.
Because there's no, I mean, there's a flower, there's but a not flower. The traditional flower that we're thinking.
You're right. It's not an alfalfa. It's not a buckwheat or a clover.
Right.
That have a lot of nectar that produce lots of honey that we know, right? But there are benefits to the bees. I mean, the bees were collecting resin off of hemp. They, you know, they value that resin for some reason.
Does that affect the flavor of the honey they produce at all?
Well, the resins don't go into the honey, but
it's
more.
But I mean, just being there around it, does that affect anything? Flavor?
We didn't notice it because they weren't producing. There's no nectar.
Right.
This is basically Jeff being polite and telling me I don't know what I'm talking about. And to be perfectly honest, I didn't, but I'm trying to learn.
So how do you get the CBD into the honey? Is it literally just mixed in, or do you cook it in?
Yeah, we've got a unique process that we've developed over the last 4 years to blend the two together. I mean, it's a challenge blending oil and water-based products.
Sure.
You know, the hemp oil being oil-based, and the honey is, about 15 to 18% water. So it takes a unique process to do that.
Fair enough. Hey, I appreciate your time, Nick. This is great.
Nick's honey was incredible. And of course, I'll have a link to his site in the show notes so you can pick some up too if you'd like to. But one of the more interesting hemp-infused products I saw was actually a seltzer water. This is Lindsay Davidson from Queen City Hemp.
So tell me what we got going on here.
So we have a CBD-infused seltzer water.
Okay.
We've got 5 milligrams of full-spectrum CBD per can, 4 different flavors, blood orange, passion fruit, guava, and lemon lavender.
How do we get the CBD into the seltzer water? How does this work?
So we make a submicron emulsion.
Okay.
We process that in-house ourselves. So,
And where does your CBD emulsion come from?
We make that in-house.
Oh,
however,
you make it?
Yeah. We're out of Ohio, but the hemp comes mostly from farms in Kentucky, Colorado, North Carolina, Oregon. We don't have a hemp program in Ohio currently.
Right.
So
I'm from Nebraska, we don't either.
Okay,
Let's do a tasting.
Awesome. You got no sugar, no calories, no carbs, no sodium.
Fantastic. So it's like LaCroix with CBD in it.
Exactly, yep. Zeros across the board, that's really important to us.
Am I going to taste anything CBD related? Like some of the tinctures I've tasted have been the kind of that earthy, grassy flavor. Is that going to be in there?
So at the end, you definitely get the slight bitterness from the hemp.
Okay.
Flavor is very important to us. One of our co-founders, his background is in flavor chemistry and from the food and packaging world.
Okay.
So he's very, very important on that. And we don't want to add a bunch of sugars or artificial flavors to the product. Kind of why that 5 milligrams.
So it's unavoidable.
Yes.
So what am I starting with?
We're going to start with the blood orange. This was our very first flavor.
Okay. When I go out tonight, folks, this is what are you next? There's no trace of smell, I noticed.
The passion fruit, you'll get a little more smell out of it.
You do get a little hint in the end.
Right,
it's definitely
the
there.
Yes.
It's not like offensive,
yes.
But it's
right.
There.
Yep.
But that's not bad. Okay, what's next here?
Right. I'm going in order.
I've talked about hemp cocktails before on this show. See episode 2 for more on that. But these seltzers already had hemp infused in them and would work really well for making cocktails with bubbles. I gotta say, the Queen City Hemp Guava flavor was absolutely outstanding.
I feel like they don't dry. It's great as a mixer. Also good between drinks. It's also good when you're hungover.
That one's my favorite so far.
The guava? That's that makes
really
me so happy.
Yeah, that one's great.
We got lemon lavender. This is our newest flavor.
While the seltzer water was wonderful, and I definitely needed to be hydrated at the time, I think one of the tastiest things that I happened to run into, and it's not just because I'm a chocolate junkie, but it was in fact chocolate. Jessica and I were all but too happy to talk to David Little from Incentive Gourmet. They're a candy company that works with Life Patent CBD, who is one of the more impressive CBD companies out there right now.
We are a manufacturer of multiple edible items with CBD.
Okay.
And we're located in the East Coast.
East Coast where?
New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Hold on a second. Yes.
Oh, there we go. Product placement.
We work with like patent as our science. We probably have a very large breadth of edible items. We come from the chocolate and candy manufacturing industries, and we were drawn into CBD.
So you started in chocolate and candy.
We've been in for 25 years.
Okay.
We work with corporations like Diageo, Bacardi. We make chocolates for them. And then people have asked us to do private label chocolate for THC companies and others that want to separate their manufacturing.
And that's how you came into this?
That's how we came in. Then we developed our lines, and we expanded to four or five different edibles. We have coffee pods, we have cookies, we have hard candy, and we are an FDA-inspected facility, as we've been for many years. So we know that side of the manufacturing process.
How did you meet these guys? How did you find LifePad? Why them?
We met them at a show.
Oh, yeah?
And they looked like they knew what they were doing, and we teamed up, and we worked pretty well. They make us the CBD because we don't want to deal with that end.
Right.
It's hard enough manufacturing a product that's correctly dosed.
Right.
Do and a lot of people in the industry are not food experts.
Sure.
We have to be because we know the game.
So the nature of the extract yourself, is it hard to get it to bind with the chocolate? Do you literally just mix it into the chocolate? How does that work?
Chocolate, what you need to do is you need to get an oil that can be melted or mixed in cocoa butter. Then
sure.
It becomes liquid and liquid. And in order to correctly work, it has to mix for a long time. And you have to have pretty good equipment. A lot of people making it by hand. We have chefs. They have a hard time making it by hand.
I'm sure.
So, I mean, people do it in small batches, okay? But in order to test out, like we have to test out, you have to have the right machinery.
Right.
Just like you need the right machinery to make chocolate without CBD.
Yeah, sure, of course.
But CBD is an interesting element because it takes a while. When you realize that you're making like a cup of CBD into 100 pounds of chocolate,
right.
It needs to mix for a long time to ratably dose out.
David went on to explain because of the nature of CBD, you can't just introduce CBD oil into the chocolate. They will reject each other. You gotta figure out a way to make them combine and come together and do so without imparting that grassy flavor, that herbal kind of flavor that you get from CBD and tinctures and whatnot. And you mask that, of course, with sugar. It works pretty well with their chocolates.
It's doing it well.
200 milligrams, too. That's a dose.
Yeah, we decided that we want to do full spectrum because our view was that if you're going to try our product, it's got to work for you. If it doesn't, you're never going to buy our product.
Sure.
Like, we get a lot of people asking us off the record to make.
We tried a milk chocolate and a dark chocolate version of David's chocolates, and they were wonderful. And I gotta say, even at a 200 milligram dose, there was no trace of that flavor, that CBD herbal flavor that I was telling you about in the tinctures, which is important if you're selling this to someone who isn't familiar with or looking for that flavor and just wants to enjoy the benefits of CBD without that kind of earthy green thing. I know it sounds like it, but I didn't just eat and drink the whole time. One of the more impressive things that I saw there was what everyone was doing with hemp on the industrial side, whether it was making concrete with hemp or composite woods or plastics with hemp. In fact, there was one guy I met that made a bike frame out of hemp. This is Patrick Flaherty, and he's doing amazing things with hemp.
And what do we do at PF Design Lab?
PF Design Lab, we are an innovator in natural materials and experts in application of those materials in consumer products and building materials and all kinds of other things that customers want to have a natural material component in them. So we come from an engineering background, also experience in the processing of materials and developing specs and quality control of those materials to get them in formats that people could use into their end-use products.
Patrick, you have a bike frame made of hemp.
I do have a bike frame made of hemp.
How the hell does that happen?
That happens from a lot of hard work, a little ingenuity, and some creativity.
Fair enough.
So I was approached by some guys that made a carbon frame, and they said, we want to use we want to make a hemp frame or natural fiber frame, really. I said, great, let's do it out of flax fiber. It's a pre-preg. It's similar to the carbon material you're already using. They said, well, you want to do it out of hemp? And I said, well, that material doesn't really exist. So they said, okay, well, let's do it anyway. So I, yeah.
That's how the best ideas happen.
Yeah,
though,
exactly.
Right?
So I told them, so I said, okay, well, we're going to have to develop a material that not only will work for us to manufacture, but will work in your manufacturing system. So I spent some time working on getting some fabrics that I thought would work and some resin systems that I thought would work. Did some experimenting, made some trials, sent them a couple pieces. The initial ones worked in their prototyping. We made a bunch more material. I went there and we did a layup, and then we ended up with a bike frame made out of hemp, the first one that I know of.
How does it hold up compared to like carbon steel? Is it lighter, heavier?
It's going to be, so the advantages of natural materials versus synthetics or things like that, lightweighting and damping properties. Now that one was designed purely, can we do it? So it's,
right.
It's only got about two layers of material in there. It weighs about what a carbon frame would weigh.
So this is like a proof of concept.
This is proof of concept, right? Okay. That's why you see that it's not completely finished on some spots and whatnot,
right.
But hey, we did it, it works. It could be, but now with some a little bit more engineering, we could actually make that so it was a rideable frame. It would increase the weight a little bit, probably about 30%, and that frame would end up being around probably 1,400 grams or so, 1,500 grams maybe.
So similar,
but better damping properties and made from rapidly renewable materials, including a bioresin.
Possibly stupid question.
Ah.
When I'm done with it, if I bury it, does
yeah.
it melt down to nothing?
It does not.
Okay.
It does not. No. So actually, I want to talk about that actually a little bit. So people talk about biodegradability or recyclability and bio-based stuff. So it's only recyclable if you actually recycle it, right? And
right.
it's only compostable if the microbes that actually can compost it get the oxygen, things that they need to actually compost it. You go bury that in a landfill and it's not going to. So really what you want to do is on the front end. You want to put as much bio-based materials on the front end of your stuff
right.
that offsets your other traditional synthetic materials, because then it doesn't matter what you do with it. At the end of the day, if you don't recycle it, if you don't, you know, if you just throw it away, it's the same thing you did with the other stuff, but you had lower energy input at the beginning of it. So you won up front. You didn't wait till the end of the day.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Patrick, I appreciate your time, man.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Let that just sink in for a second. Patrick, who is admittedly an engineering genius and nerd, made a bike frame out of hemp. Not long after I talked to Patrick, I sat in on a panel that discussed hemp usage in construction and building, and they were talking about using hemp-infused lumber, using hemp-infused concrete, literally making concrete and building materials out of hemp, a plant that grows in 100 days. It's completely renewable. Instead of cutting down trees, you can grow this plant in 100 days and make concrete out of it, make composite woods, strengthen plastics with it. It was incredible what these people were doing. And the one thing that everyone there had in common was a sense of responsibility, not just to the public and to the people that were buying this stuff, but to the earth. I mean, listen to the way that this guy that I talked to talks about the way that they're fighting mites that attack hemp plants. He's not doing it.
So it's
poison.
All good. And we've run tests in Colorado on hemp on russet mites, where the growers were having trouble. They had tried a number of different materials to control russet mites. They weren't very effective. So we said, here's another option. So our product was somewhat unique. So we ran the trials, multiple replications. We controlled russet mites about 99%, which previously they were hoping to get, you know, 50%.
Right.
So it's a huge opportunity for our company and for growers to deal with a pest that's a major issue.
The russet mite, is that the biggest issue?
It's one of them. Hemp, it's a strange story. These mites are actually released by the state of Colorado as a biocontrol for tumbleweed, Canadian thistle, and some other issues.
So they attack weeds.
That's
therefore,
correct.
Therefore, hemp
Surprise.
Being a weed,
yeah, exactly.
the russet mites go for
Yeah,
them.
Guess what?
That makes perfect sense.
Right. But there's not any real controls out there that are effective until this came along. So
how is your chemicals different than, say, like other pesticides that kill
you? Yeah. It's absolutely the mode of action. These are botanical oils that suffocate pests and also...
So not poison at all?
Totally not poisonous. There's no residue left on the crop afterwards. These are actually not registered with the U.S. EPA. They're exempt because they're food-grade materials.
So you could drink this if you want.
Well, you wouldn't want to, but you theoretically, it wouldn't kill you.
Okay.
And it wouldn't do any permanent damage.
I see you don't put anything in it to make it taste good.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's right.
We don't want them enjoying it.
I apologize. I lost his name in the shuffle, but even the people that were there pushing pesticides were coming from a very responsible place and thinking about how these pesticides would affect the environment. Now, I admit I don't go to a lot of agricultural expos, but I'm assuming that most of the people that are at these other agriculture expos don't talk like this. The NOCO Expo wasn't just full of vendors. There were several great panels as well, one of which was Kit's panel, Hemp in the Media, and I will definitely figure out a way to get that up for you to listen to. But one of the best panels that I went to was the Indigenous Peoples panel, and it was Native American tribes that were growing hemp on their reservations, and they had some really incredible things to say about the nature of the plant and how we view big agricultural farming today. I'm going to leave you with some comments from Marcus Grinon, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that, and Winona LaDuc. Marcus is from the Hempstead Project Heart, and Winona works for Winona's Hemp, both of which grow hemp on Indian reservations. And they had a whole different idea of how we should even think about these plants. I'll let them tell you about it.
Yeah, so back in 2016, we were down in Westminster at the HIA conference, and Alex and I were on a panel there as well. And afterwards, we had somebody come in, and I think it might have been Doug Fine that was recording us. And so we were sitting in there in a room, and we were talking about patents and genetics, and doing patent and genetic and whatnot. And the question was posed, like, you know, do you patent your own genetics? Because Alex has his own seed. And, you know, he thought about it for a while, and he's like, you know, making a lot of good money out of it. But then he consulted his elders, and the elders said, you know, you patent that genetics, you're going to have those genetics in the afterlife, and that plant is going to be your slave. And he didn't want that. And so he didn't patent his genetics. And so in my mind, when I look at, you know, what's going on in the industry of like certified seed, Europe has patented everything. It's like, man, I just look at it and I'm like, really? I have to sign all this paperwork in order to get your seed so I can plant it? Like, man, this came from Coco Matsakihi. It didn't come from some lab. Like, we should be able to grow this no matter what. And be able to crossbreed it and change it and make it better than what it is right now. And, you know, in my mind, it's been a real honor to learn from Alex, and also be an honor here to sit on stage with Rosebud. We shared a stage back in NOCO 3, I think. You spoke first, I spoke second. So it's nice to have her back to sit and talk with us and conversate. So, but I mean, yeah, if anything you take away today is, you know, fight against the patents and the genetics. Because really that's what's gonna really hamper the industry. And it's gonna hamper tribes more than anything.
Anybody else on that at all?
I got it. On the patent. So my tribe grew, and I grow now for 3 years. And so originally they got some European varieties, and then they all went feral. So I like feel like they all kind of came home to us then. You know what I'm saying? And then we got a little bit of this and that. I got some Nebraska hemp. We call it the Trudell hemp collection, you know, in honor of John. You know, and so I just feel like that, you know, hemp really grew well in our territory. That's why we had 11 hemp mills. And we need those northern varieties. Like, we do best with those varieties that are northern European varieties, because we're super far north, you know? And I feel like that, like I said before, a plant's not a slave. And so I feel, you know, confident growing that. And, you know, we're growing fiber hemp, so it's not THC. I don't gotta worry about that stuff in it, you know? But I really feel like that those plants belong in that territory, and that, you know, they do good in there. And so I'm kind of in that same, I hadn't thought about planting them, and they just seem to, they all reseed, mm-hmm. You know, so I feel like they're happy. Mm-hmm. They belong to somebody once, but that was a long time ago.
Exactly.
Yes.
You've all kind of kind of touched on this.
That last part was a little hard to hear, and, well, that's my fault. But what Winona said was, these plants may have belonged to somebody once, but that was a long time ago. And at the end of the day, everyone at this conference had so much respect for the hemp plant itself. It was amazing. And I gotta say, coming in as a neophyte, I left as a believer. I didn't just drink the Kool-Aid, if you will. I saw the evidence. I talked to people that believed in this stuff. I met so many incredible people working in this industry and working to not just educate the public and what hemp can do, but bring it to the public, force it on them, and say, hey, we need to make a change. We need to do better. And there's a way to do it, and we can do it with hemp. I gotta say, NoCo 6 was incredible. I had an amazing time there. I met so many wonderful people that are working so hard to bring hemp to people in so many different ways. And what you heard here doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of what was at this convention. Ministry of Hemp's videographer Jessica has a bunch of videos up on the website you should check out as well. I had an amazing time and I learned so much, and I cannot wait to go again next year. I just hope they can find a bigger space, because with this much interest and this many people showing up, there is no way they can do it in the same convention center. So that was my NoCo 6 diary. It was an amazing time. There was so much more that I wish I could tell you about, but this would end up being a 4 to 5 hour show, and I'm not going to ask you to do that. But if you find yourself in Denver in the last weekend of March next year, I highly, highly suggest you check it out. It was incredible. Next time on the show, we are going to be talking about extraction, the science of how you get cannabinoids out of a hemp plant, specifically for CBD. And I've lined up a bunch of really smart people that are going to tell you about all the different ways that cannabinoids are extracted. In the meantime, I would love to hear from you guys. Again, you can hit us up on Twitter at Ministry of Hemp, or on Facebook /Ministry of Hemp. You can call us at 402-819-6147. Leave us a voicemail with a question or a suggestion for the show, anything you want, and I will play it on here. I look forward to a day where I have enough questions that we can just have a whole show playing your questions with a professional answering, not someone like me. I'll get somebody smarter, trust me. You can also send your questions or reviews or suggestions to matt@ministryofhemp.com. That's matt@ministryofhemp.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our show on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. By the way, if you like the show and you really want to help me out, leave a review on iTunes. It seriously helps in search results, and it just takes a second of your time. As always, there will be a full written transcript of this show in the notes, including links to everybody that I talked to at the NoCo show. Like I said, I will be back in a couple weeks here with a show about extraction. It's going to be really cool, and I can't wait to tell you guys about it. But for now, this is Matt Baum with the Ministry of Hemp, reminding you to take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will you?